Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. In this episode, obesity medicine specialist and OMA clinical education director, Dr. Nicholas Pennings, interviews Dr. Kate Varney, a highlighted speaker from Obesity Medicine 2021 virtual conference, about primary care management of patients following bariatric surgery. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Every year, over 250,000 bariatric surgeries are done in the United States. Follow-up and continued monitoring of patients after bariatric surgery is a key component of long-term success. Surgical programs of excellence go to great lengths to track and follow up their patients after surgery. However, many patients are still lost to follow-up. Patients who have to travel great distances to see their surgeon or patients who have moved away after surgery are at particular risk. Serious complications from surgery can manifest themselves many years after the procedure, so it's important for clinicians to be aware of the short and long-term complications of bariatric surgery, as well as familiarity with monitoring requirements. Hi, I'm Dr. Nick Pennings, Chair of Family Medicine at the Campbell University School of Osteopathic Medicine and Executive Director of Clinical Education at the Obesity Medicine Association. And today I'm speaking with Kate Varney, DO, Assistant Professor and Obesity Medicine Specialist at the University of Virginia in Charlotte, Virginia. Dr. Varney is a OMA 2021 Spring Conference virtual speaker. Her presentation was titled Primary Care Management of Patients Following Bariatric Surgery. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Varney.
Thanks for having me.
So at your presentation at the Spring Conference, you mentioned that 48% of patients are lost to follow-up 1 year after bariatric surgery. That's a remarkably high percentage of patients. What do you think are some of the key reasons why patients are not following up with their bariatric surgeons?
Yeah, so there's been a couple of studies, you know, you see numbers anywhere from 14 to 48% was the highest loss to follow up in one, after 1 year. And, you know, as one would assume, there's a variety of reasons. But, you know, I think one of the ones that we should really be aware of is something that we found in a comparative analysis about over a decade ago, which is that patients wouldn't comply with regular follow-ups if they're not prompted to by the bariatric clinic. You know, some of these numbers are based over information over the last decade. And so, you know, certain clinics may not have had like a robo dial to like remind a patient, or, you know, they didn't schedule out 1 year. And so like the surgery clinic would think, okay, well, we're going to put the onus on them to call and to schedule this. So I suspect some of that has happened now, but now that we have, you know, an accreditation process that is kind of tracking the quality of bariatric programs, I think that they're implementing more of these kind of fail safes in order to capture the patients and keep them coming back. I think some other things to be aware of is that, you know, patients feel sometimes disappointed with their weight loss. And so, which is really interesting, right? They think that they've failed in some way, but that if they didn't lose, you know, what they had expected or what the surgeon had expected, and they kind of feel, you know, disappointment. And so they don't necessarily want to go back to the surgeon and, you know, and face that disappointment there with them. And I think that's one of the things that we as providers can really do is to set up expectations of weight loss. And given that we have all this data now from the accreditation and quality program that we have now, we're actually able to track what their projected weight loss would be with each of the bariatric procedures in the first year. So, you know, that's one of the things that we can do at one of those initial visits is we can say, okay, this is how much you would be losing at 1, 3, 6, 9, 12 months. Okay. So, and the good thing like here at our program is that the surgeons, if they identify them falling off of that curve, then they go, okay, you got to go over to my obesity specialist. She's trained in this. She's going to get you going on something else. So,
I think you bring up an important point there. That anybody who treats patients' weights, who helps with weight management experiences, patients are always very happy to come in and see you when they're losing weight and everything's going well. But as soon as things get not so good, as soon as they start that they're regaining or they're not losing, then they're reluctant to come in. And I think one of the things that's really important is that we always have to tell our patients that that's when you're most important, right? That's when your role is most vital, is when you're not losing weight or when you're regaining weight, that's when you need to see us. And that's something I'd like to have a discussion about with my patients early on.
Yeah, that's great. And I mean, so I use something very similar to my patients is that, you know, I say something to, you know, like, I am your safety net. I am not here for always just the good times. I am here for the bad times. And, you know, even though we've scheduled to see each other in another 3 months, there's a caveat to that, that if anything starts going wrong, or if you start to, you know, regain weight, then that's when you at least need to put a call into me. One of the other reasons too, that, you know, you actually kind of mentioned this earlier, is that it's, the lack of follow-up can also be due to location. So in the past, you know, it's growing now, but in the past, most of the places that did bariatric surgery were at these big academic centers, and they could be quite a distance away. They weren't, you know, in every town. And so like here at UVA, I have patients that come from Southwest Virginia, and it's a 5-hour drive for them. So, you know, sometimes, you know, they don't have money to put gas in their car to come up here. And so, so that's why I think it's really important to have this comprehensive center, not just the bariatric surgery, but to have this team approach with nurse practitioners and nurses and dietitians and social workers that can identify these things that are barriers to the patient accessing care and help them overcome that. You know, we should be responsible for setting these patients up for the best success we can.
And one of the things that happened with the whole pandemic with COVID was that telemedicine became much more prevalent. So has that impacted your ability to complete follow-ups and maintain follow-ups with patients? Have you engaged in telemedicine as a means of communicating with these patients?
Absolutely. It has been a lifesaver, and I am so glad that it happened. You know, me and my partner, my obesity practice, we started doing telemedicine very quickly afterwards. We were like, yes, finally an opening for this, you know? And so it's a great way to check in with patients. It's a great, a lot of times, you know, I'm sure a lot of providers can kind of relate to this. A patient will call in and they'll have this kind of complex question. And then you call them back and you're on the phone for like 15 minutes, but that's not really billable time. And it's taking away from your patient care during the day. And so we're happy to do that, but it's great that we can now say, hey, this is kind of a long, I really want to spend some time with this. You know, can I send this to my schedulers and have them schedule a telemedicine visit so we can at least talk about it? And, you know, this isn't about like, you know, billing and getting the most money out of patients. It's about billing so we can continue to offer this service and help as many patients as we can.
And making that type of care doable.
Exactly.
So when a patient presents to a primary care office after having had a bariatric procedure and the primary care provider has identified that they've not followed up for several years, what are some of the first steps that primary care provider should do to evaluate the situation?
So I think the single most important thing that they can do is to actually have their bariatric surgery status in their problem list or surgical history. It should be slapped all over that chart. You know, I have come across patients that have been seen, you know, have been seen by other people, but it wasn't even in their surgical history. And so, you know, we can't do what we don't know. And so something to immediately identify this. That way, you know, even if the PCP isn't actively managing their obesity, you know, it'll be known and reviewed at some point in that visit. Next, I think the biggest thing would be nutritional deficiencies. For those of you that had attended my lecture, I tried to consolidate information like what labs to get annually or every 6 months, or which screenings that they might need earlier than we would suspect. Like typically we do a bone density screening for at age 65, but in patients that have a history of a Roux-en-Y or gastric bypass, we would want to do that much earlier because they're at higher risk for osteopenia, osteoporosis, that thinning of the bones. So that way, you know, we can identify those really early. But I wanted you to be able to have that information so that way you can create your own list from my presentation and then create like a smart phrase or hot text, depending on what your EMR is. None of this information, you know, information is proprietary. You know, I want to get this information out and allow people to help as many people as possible.
And I think you make a great point about asking about it. Patients don't often think of bariatric surgery as a surgery, very often similar to cosmetic surgery, that patients don't often tell you about cosmetic surgery that they've had unless they're prompted. The same about bariatric surgery. They may not think of it as a surgery because it wasn't some emergency procedure that had to be done for a particular event. And so what are the best resources that primary care providers can use to find out about what things they need to test for after which procedures?
So I think the single best source of information for this would be the clinical practice guidelines that covers nutritional, metabolic, and non-surgical support following bariatric surgery. So this was actually just updated in 2020 with the help of the Obesity Medicine Association. And it was multiple organizations, including like the ASMBS, which is the Professional Society for the Metabolic Bariatric Surgeons, and the Obesity Society. So this document reviews everything that needs to happen before and after the bariatric surgery in regards to screening, monitoring, treatment of some complications. It reviews which supplements and the dosing, because it is different with patients that have had a history. And so which one of these are best suited for bariatric patients due to the changes in absorption and anatomy. So you can easily find this through a web search, or it's also on the ASMBS website, which we can, I guess, maybe provide a link or something to.
Okay, very good. So as healthcare providers, we're trained to add medications to treat various conditions. However, deprescribing long-term medications is something that gets a lot less attention. When patients are losing a significant amount of weight, they're often able to come off of medications for diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, and other conditions. So what do primary care providers need to think about when managing these conditions when patients are losing weight?
This is like the most fun part of being a primary care physician, is saying, I am taking you off the medication today.
It is.
I always tell my patients that my responsibility as a physician is not to put you on medications, but try to get you off of medications. And so I love this part. But so basically what we need to know is that these patients need to be, they need to know, right? So sometimes they don't even realize. I have patients that are on, you know, 20, 30, 40, you know, units of insulin before the surgery, that, you know, they're covered with insulin during the surgery, but then that's it. They don't even need, you know, they don't need insulin very quickly, like within the first month. So patients need to know that. So if we have a patient, we've referred them to the bariatric surgeon, you know, most of the time they will review this stuff, but you're there also to reiterate this information. Hey, I'm here. So even before we were working kind of in a, you know, collaboration or a partnership with the surgeons, I would always tell my patients, okay, I put a reminder in the chart that's sent to me. And then I also tell them, I want to see you at month 3 after the surgery, or before that, if you start feeling lightheaded or you feel like your blood sugar is dropping, and really take home and reiterate that message to them that, you know, you have got to be watching this because this is the fun part of this is that you get to come off these medications. So things to watch for.
Yeah, I think that that's very important. Sometimes patients themselves may be somewhat insecure about stopping medications for fear that their condition is going to go out of control.
Right, yeah.
How about with CPAP in patients with obstructive sleep apnea? As patients lose weight, CPAP settings may require adjustment or may even need to be reevaluated. How do you manage patients on CPAP as they're losing weight?
So it's really interesting. I think the patients are pretty, like, they know really quickly because that is initially set for, you know, this, you know, snapshot in time. And so they will, you know, at a visit or they'll call and they go like, I feel like it's like just rushing me with air. They're not sleeping. So, you know, watch for sleep complaints, you know, and not just sleep complaints, but like I'm waking up with headaches, I'm having more migraines, I'm not feeling well during the day. I've got, you know, my legs are tingly and restless at night, you know, so kind of these things that we think of like when we're actually trying to identify sleep apnea, look for those. And then, but also to, you know, it's just something that you can kind of, you know, as you're, you know, see these patients afterwards. So I see you had bariatric surgery. So how is this going? You know, how's your blood pressure? How's your blood sugar? And, you know, are you sleeping well? I think that also too, sleep is really one of those things that needs to, you know, us as obesity providers, we know this, right? We know that it's not just diet, exercise. It's also like stress management and sleep. So just asking about sleep and sleep quality, how that plays into obesity.
So weight regain is another area of concern in long-term management of patient status post-bariatric procedures. What role can obesity medicine specialists and primary care providers play in managing weight regain?
You know, primary care providers do so much, often with so little time. I found that patients are willing to come back for just weight management counseling. If we ask and the patient is willing to discuss their weight, I may say, hey, we've covered a lot of information today, and I really want to dedicate some time without feeling rushed to discuss this. I want to create a plan that works for you. I don't want to put you on the Atkins diet. I don't want to put you on the DASH diet. I want to put you on the Jane Doe diet and set you up for the best success. So one of the most important things that I've learned over the last decade is that one particular diet may show superiority over another in a research study, but if it's not sustainable based on my patient's food preference or their culture, then is it really superior, right? So is it the best? So patients trust their primary care provider. You know, this is why, you know, people are willing to follow their primary care provider when they leave one clinic. They know them. They know that they, you know, I think that they feel more willing to go on that weight loss journey with the provider that knows their full history and has time to meet with them over multiple visits. As you mentioned before, it's also about recognizing which medications are weight promoting and choosing an alternative when starting or continuing a patient on medication. And, you know, even if a patient, I want to remind primary care providers that even if you don't have time, you feel like you don't have time to learn about obesity treatment right now, you know, at least have a team in place that you can refer to assist you, you know, have a bariatric surgeon that you can have a relationship that you can call and say, hey, I just feel comfortable with this. You know, something's not right here, or a dietitian. And so until you take time to kind of, you know, learn about this thing, nobody's going to become like kind of an expert overnight, you know? So I would just really encourage people just start with, you know, one thing and just kind of start learning, and then it just kind of feeds itself that you want to learn more even after the patients have been, after they're so successful, you want to keep on doing that.
And I think that's a great point, that you want to make it a dedicated visit, that you really need to take the time to focus on that, because it's not something you can squeeze into a 15-minute visit with hypertension and diabetes and all the other things.
Right.
So in all likelihood, bariatric surgery will be even more commonplace in the future. What role do you see primary care providers playing in the future long-term management of patients who have bariatric surgery? And does it even make sense for bariatric surgeons to be responsible for so much of the follow-up of patients? Or should obesity medicine specialists and primary care providers assume a larger role in future care of bariatric patients?
Yeah, I hold bariatric surgeons, particularly the ones I work here at UVA, in the highest regard. But I think in order to help the most patients, we need to keep everybody working to the highest level of their degree and skill. And as you may have heard in my presentation, only 1% of patients that are eligible for bariatric surgery actually receive it. And primary care providers are rock stars. I really don't think that they get enough credit for what they know and what they do on a daily basis. And I think this makes them perfectly suited for managing patients following surgery, just as they do for a plethora of other chronic diseases. Obesity is a chronic disease, so the surgery is not necessarily curative. It can better control or can place the obesity in remission, just like any other disease. But it can also become quickly out of control if it's not being properly managed by both the patient and their primary care provider. And, you know, I hear some primary care providers say, you know, how can I control what these people are eating? And I can't control the patient if they're not doing their part. But I really don't think that's a fair statement, because there's so many things that go into managing obesity. We can't assume that the patient knows all this. This is complex stuff that contributes to obesity, and they need a partner that has the advanced training and the knowledge of the body to guide them on this journey. And as I said before, they're much more likely to be going in to see their primary care physician than a bariatric surgeon. And we can be the eyes and the ears on the ground, but know that, you know, they can always we can always assist the patients with getting back into the surgeon's office if there's something that we feel like is beyond our scope to an ability to manage.
So managing patients as they lose weight can be a daunting task. You have to consider nutritional issues, physical activity challenges, behavioral health issues, deprescribing medications, and weight regain. What resources can primary care providers tap into to help care for patients after bariatric procedures?
Like I said before, primary care providers can do a lot, you know, we need help, just like a bariatric surgeon has, you know, kind of partners with, you know, in their clinic, a PA, a nurse practitioner. Delegate this responsibility if that's how you feel that you can get the most people, the most help, right? There's areas that I personally know that, like, hey, I've got this dietitian in town and she kind of deals with this. She is amazing in this. She is way better than me at this. She can spend a lot more time. So I refer over there. So I would kind of say, like, your power group would be, you know, kind of your fantastic five or seven would be like a dietitian, and somebody with exercise physiologist or a physical therapist, having that bariatric surgeon that you can call, even if they didn't do that patient surgery, they are always so happy. They always seem to be so happy to help. And if you don't have that resource or you don't know where that resource is, then they can help you with that.
And understanding that they may also have some psychological challenges associated with their weight loss, sometimes develop dependencies that they didn't have before, or just not know how to deal with their new body image that they've had. So there's a lot of issues. And so tapping into psychological support too can be really helpful as well.
Yeah, we think about, like, okay, somebody's having weight loss. This is amazing, right? They're so happy, right? It's not always that, you know, there's a lot of psychological things that can go in, and they can feel grief for the person that they used to be. You know, they used to be kind of that, you know, jovial, life of the party kind of person, you know, and that's what, you know, their friends and family have set them up to be. And so they're not that person anymore. They might have to deal with disappointment from a partner or spouse or family member that, you know, that they don't like change, you know, or they themselves are struggling with weight. And so, you know, it's difficult to see somebody else succeeding. So there is so much that can happen. So don't just think about like, okay, they're going to be happy. They should be really happy. Depression and anxiety, it is a disease process. And yes, the circumstances can sometimes, you know, improve or worsen the disease. But, you know, I would say and recommend that all patients having bariatric surgery should be screened for depression and anxiety every year. And we should be there to support them. There's psychiatrists, psychologists that are available, social workers, licensed clinical social workers that, you know, here in our area, I think we have like 5 or 6 that we really depend on. So again, it might take some digging, but you know, if you can't find that information, you know, reach out to an Obesity Medicine Association member. You know, you can find resources on OMA members on our website. And, you know, they could perhaps lead you in the right direction. It kind of feels like a small community, right? Like we're kind of a small community. Like
Absolutely.
There's a lot of us, yes. But it feels like a really tight community that's always willing to help each other out.
It is, and we are. Well, thank you for being with us today. You can see Dr. Varney's presentation at Primary Care Management of Patients Following Bariatric Surgery on the OM Academy website at obesitymedicine.org. Where can our listeners go to learn more about your work, Dr. Varney?
So you can find more information on the University of Virginia website, and then you can also follow me on Twitter at Kate Varney.
Very good. Thank you. We look forward to seeing you at future conferences.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Varney. For more information about Obesity Medicine podcasts and other resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. Loved the episode of Obesity, a Disease? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. The views expressed in this podcast episode are those of the show hosts and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please check back in soon for another episode of Obesity, a Disease.